Because they had trouble. They had them all lined up, but then they don't come through for whatever reason. I don't know. Yes, absolutely. Yep.
I'm glad that we still have a few minutes. That's interesting. Especially where everybody has a chance.
My doctor Google still says it's 5:29. I'm watching it.
Yeah, it's true.
Now it is 5:30. I'm pretty precise when it comes to starting council meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and welcome back. It seems like it's been a long time since we were here in this chamber doing this job.
It's a whole new year.
It is a whole new year, and we've been gone for basically 4 weeks minus 4 hours. So it's nice to have you all back. I want you to notice that I'm wearing my snow tie.
Oh.
So I hope that each of us will mention the need for water in our prayers. And with that, I will ask Mr. Carter Wilkie to offer the prayer this evening. And Mr. Randall McEwen will lead us in the pledge.
You bet. Our dear Heavenly Father, we're grateful to be together today. We're very grateful for this country which we live in, this state, and especially this city of Cedar City. Father, we're very grateful for the opportunity we have to be able to serve our citizens, and we're very grateful for our citizens and all that they do and the ideas and the strength that they bring to us. And we ask thee to please bless us and guide us as we make decisions that affect them and affect this great city. And we say these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Please repeat with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So did we have the new flag before?
Mayor, I would entertain and make a motion that we approve the agenda order approval.
Second.
I have a motion second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you very much. You'll note the gallery has received some new art, and I would like to read this statement from Steve Decker, our librarian. He says, if the question arises this evening, I didn't give it a chance. I'm just going to launch right in. The new display in the mayor's gallery represents donations of Cedar City by two donors. One wishes to remain anonymous. The other will be noted as donations from Melody and Bruce Hughes. Many of these pieces are from local artists, and they were accepted because they add breadth and depth to the city's permanent collection. They represent 31 pieces that have been donated to the city in this fiscal year. I assume that's last. There could be a few more coming from the anonymous donor, but other than that, I don't anticipate any more this year. But enjoy, and I guess they're part of our collection. I didn't know we were art collectors, but apparently we are.
We have quite a collection, Mayor, that belonged to the Cedar City Art Committee for a number of years, and then we acquired it. So, and it's what you see over in Festival Hall and other places. It's great. It's a great addition, and it just brings in our depth to our community.
Thank you very much. I'd like to recognize that we have some youth council members here with us. And so before I turn it over to the city council, I'll ask if you have any matters of business that you would like to bring forward tonight. And if you do, come forward to the microphone. Appears to be none.
I suspect not.
You.
We haven't met yet. Our
we haven't
first meeting
yet met.
Is Monday.
We're going to do that next Monday, and they will get their introduction to the state legislature the following week, and we'll go there and we'll do the process again up there with the new city council, youth city council. So with that, then I'll see if there are comments from the regular city council.
Mayor, I just have a couple things. First of all, I just wanted to thank the youth city council for being with us. I think, if I count correctly, there's 8 of them here. This is probably the best attendance we've ever had. So they're starting off strong, so that's a good way to start. And we'll be having our first meeting of this year on Monday at 6 o'clock here in the chambers. So thank you for being here. This is a work meeting, and you'll hear us discuss a lot of items, and who knows how long it will be. The second item I wanted to discuss, and I was hoping that either Chief Phillips or someone from the fire department was here, but I don't see anybody. I just wanted to, on behalf of our city, I want to extend our condolences to all of those folks in California with those devastating fires that are taking place, and the people that are, thousands of people evacuated. It's affected members of my family that live in Southern California. And I just wanted to find out if we had any, if we'd be deploying any equipment or any personnel down that way.
We don't know yet.
Okay, fair enough. All right, thank you. That's, Mayor, that's all I have, and just wish everybody a happy new year.
Thank you. Council?
Anybody else? I don't have anything.
I just had one quick thing. Today we were sent that email on that change order for the builder's risk policy. The documentation that was included with it was just a quote. Could we actually get a copy of the policy or of the declarations page showing the premium that was actually paid for that policy?
Sure.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can send that.
Okay. Staff, do you have matters? Please, Ryan.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Just a quick issue to bring up real quick for you. About, I would say, 6 or 7 years ago, we were notified by UDOT that that rail spur that's out by our MTI stations, that is ours. We have to inspect that, and we have to make sure it's in compliance, and that we own that, and that we maintain it. So at that point, we put in a budget for maintaining, for inspecting and maintaining it. We put $50,000 a year in there. About every two and a half years, they have to come out and they find that it's out of spec, and they have to go in there and do a lot of work to put it back into spec. We just had an inspection again last week. It's out of spec. So they're coming next week to fix it. They did notify us that if we do the same fix that we've always done, it's probably going to go out about every 2 years due to our weather up here and due to the trains that come off there. It opens us up to liability for a derailment or anything there. But they will come and they'll do the same fix that we've always had them do, and it's this time it's a little bit more exhaustive than what it has been, but it's going to be $46,000 for them to do that temporary fix.
The temporary fix.
Temporary. So they did say there's a more permanent fix where they can come and they can cement the tracks in place, and it will hold for 10 to 15 years if we want to do that. But that cost is going to be $96,000. So we do have about $45,000 left in that account to maintain that, but we don't have enough to cover the full $96,000. I talked with Eric Witzke, our street superintendent. He does believe that he can save enough this year in his budget to cover the difference of that. At the end of the year, what we'll do is either in our chip seal budget or one of those, we will reduce that amount, and we can do a budget opening, and we'll move that over to cover the over expenditure of this account for the railroad. If that's something that you guys would give me permission to go ahead and do, we'll get with them and we'll do the more permanent fix, and then we won't be paying this $30,000 to $40,000 every 2 years to have them come and do a temporary one.
And it's the same fix time after time after time?
It has. They just use wood stakes and ties to put it in instead of concrete it in.
So how does it get out of spec? The cars just...
Yeah, just with the use and with the weather, it just things move over there. And I mean, it's out minimal, but it's enough to wear it.
But it's not that their specs have changed. Yeah. It's just that it just happens.
Yeah,
to
it just moves.
I see.
It just kind of migrates over, and so it's just our responsibility. And that's why we've had to have them come and inspect it twice a year, because they've really come down strict on those regulations
sure.
and enforcing those to make sure that we don't have any derailments or anything.
Yeah, I can't.
Well, safety. Safety's yeah. paramount. My other question, I guess, I would ask is, Eric's very generous to make this kind of offer. I just want to make sure. Are we going to not be able to complete some of the projects that were planned or budgeted for by this $50,000 saving?
No, I think that with a combination of some of the savings that he'll have, we have variability in okay. a lot of the accounts, like our fuel account, our the cost of
sure.
Oil and stuff goes up and down. So we have some play at the end of every year. So if we don't have enough there, then what he'll do is he'll just move some of that chip seal over into the next year's budget the next month mm-hmm. and still be able to get everything done with what they're, okay. they're looking at doing. This is all under his budget. The railroad part is as well. So he's just kind of managing
gotcha.
His budgets the way.
Well, it seems to me that we ought to do this for safety's sake.
It doesn't make sense to keep doing it every two years.
Well, right. we'll save about the amount we're paying in that 10-year
four
window,
years,
right?
Yeah, so yeah, we can get a ROI within 4 or 5 years.
So is this something that we need to approve in a action meeting?
We just came to let you know this is the direction gotcha. We're going to go, and that's about it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Ryan.
Any other staff comments?
Actually, Mayor, sorry, I have a question for one of our staff. Ken, I had a citizen reach out to me. Are there any of the stuff left from Discovery Park, the boards, the bricks, or is it all gone at this point?
He's making his way to the podium.
I know. I'm sorry. I should have let him know.
We're going to have to get that roving mic just for the corner.
Yeah.
Good evening. Ken Nelson with Leisure Services. So we are currently still in the renovation destructive phase. We took those tiles. Anthony, are those tiles still there? Okay. So we gave notice to come pick up any tiles that those folks wanted.
This was one of the boards. I think their name or something was engraved in one of the Hardy boards.
And the ones
the
that
treks.
There's some
know.
That picked those up, and other ones they're gone.
So they're gone. Okay. Just so I know what to tell them.
Yeah.
But those names are going to go back, aren't they, on some permanent?
We collected those names. We're at 1,066.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Names. And we'll put those
on a plaque or.
Yeah, we'll make a wall.
Monument of some kind.
We'll make a notification of those and their service and stuff
okay.
still. But we just, we had boards that had names on both sides. And
so who gets it?
So whoever wanted it, they could come get it. But now we're moving forward. And just for the update, the Big T's ready to roll on the 20th. I don't know if we'll be that far in our demolition phase, but it won't be a holdup on their end. So as soon as we're done, they can move in and we'll get it going.
We're doing most of the demo ourselves, aren't we, as the
correct.
Department?
Anthony's guys are up there every day.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other staff? Thank you. Public comments? Ann
Clark, Happy New Year. I haven't been standing here very much in the last few months.
Neither have we for 4 weeks.
I feel like my speech has been somewhat limited. But I wanted to stand because I missed the week right before Christmas vacation, and I know the Capstone kids from SUU came and spoke, and I went back and I read the article in the newspaper, and I went back and listened to that meeting, and I wanted to say to you that they were absolutely right. And I don't care whether it's we've got to somehow save our historic downtown and save those older neighborhoods. Because it isn't, I know Mr. Molly said it's the people, and it is the people that make Cedar City, but it's more than that. It's the old houses, it's the character, it's all the things that make Cedar City a special place to live. And it's very interesting because everywhere I go, a lot of places I go, if the city comes up, it's always the people are talking about how they love the parade and they love the little town of it, but they don't like what's happening. And it's really interesting because it happened this week. I went to get glasses, right? And I'm sitting there, and I haven't been feeling well, so I'm not really talking. That's why I'm probably leaving early tonight. But this man said to my husband and I, where are you guys from? Are you from here? And then he went on to tell us how he had been here for several years. Great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather. And there was another older lady, I don't know who she was, and he was saying that they have loved Cedar City, but they don't want it destroyed. And the other lady, I don't know who she was, said, yes, I used to love living here 20 years ago. I still have all the activities, but I don't like the way it's growing because what it's doing is it's erasing our history and our downtown and our older neighborhoods. And that's why I was glad that the Capstone kids stood up because, see, it's not just me. It's a lot of people that love all the older parts. That's what makes Cedar City. It's all of it together. And so I am just, again, begging you to come up with something that we can do so that we can recognize. Personally, I said if you want to do one thing to stop the destruction in those neighborhoods is get rid of the SHD zone. It was imposed on those people. It's ruined their neighborhoods. And if you simply got rid of that, it would control some of the growth of the developers. So I think we need to look at, I've often said, why don't we go back and look at some of these ordinances that we've put into place and see if we really got out of them what we wanted. Because I think the SHD zone was meant to help in a positive way. But I think it's had a very negative effect in those neighborhoods. It's inflated the houses. It's destroyed, you know, a lot of those historic places. So I think we need to look back on our ordinances and the zoning and see what we can do differently. So as the new year starts, I'm hoping that we can look at that and really do something. Because my first opinion, I'm ending. When I saw those kids talking and I watched on my phone, I thought, and nobody will even listen, except a few. So I hope everyone will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other public comments, please.
Yeah, this is nothing new that you'll hear from me. However, you remember I drilled a well for the city out near Quitchapaw Creek?
Your name, Gary.
Excuse me?
You got to state your name.
Oh, my name's Gary Farnsworth Player. My uncle invented television, which makes me smart. Okay. We've had a tremendous, aquifer shortage developing this year from all this lack of rain and snow. So I'm just encouraging the city, if they can, to go back to the well that I started at Quitchapaw Creek, because I just entered about 100 feet of fractured quartz monzonite, and the well was making 150 gallons a minute, and then everybody just said, stop, we can't spend any more. So I'd like to see that well reentered. And also the well that was drilled in Last Chance Canyon, that just was entering into the Straight Cliff Sandstone when it was stopped, and it was starting to make water. So I'm just saying those are two areas where we could go very cheaply to try to increase our water supply. Okay.
Thank you, and we're going to talk
about
water.
Hey, Mr. Player, did you say 150 gallons a minute?
Yeah. How big was the well? How many inch, do you remember?
It was about 9-inch well.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It could be re-entered pretty easily.
That's not big enough for the industry.
We're going to talk about water. You just will hang around, Gary. Other public comments? Seen none. I'm on the first item on the agenda. Shane, you come up. I asked Matt Baker. Matt, come on up. Don't be bashful. We had that. Jonathan is here in the room. Ryan Marshall is in the room. Ryan, why don't you come join us? Jonathan, you can stay seated at your perch in the engineer's thing. Congratulations to Matt Baker, who has been designated as the superintendent.
Congratulations or condolences,
yeah.
Depending, right?
I was coming down Ridge Road the other night, like 11:30 or 11 o'clock, and I saw the dump truck and the truck pulling the skid steer going up Ridge Road in the middle of the night, and I was like, well, that's a water line break in the middle of the night, wherever they're headed to.
They were there last night,
yep. Well, it's a distinguished position to hold in the city, has been for a long time. The first one I met was Clement Adams. And I've told you about him, and he wrote the book on the history of water in Iron County, and it's a big book. This is not quite as big as his book. However, it's a very weighty book, 225 pages or something like that, and it's available to each and every one of you if you want detail. It's all in there. This is a master plan, drinking water master plan. Now, you guys are going to, you've all been for a ride with me, and we've all ridden out and looked around out in the north, and we've driven in the desert, and you're going to decide what you want to do. And you can see that the numbers have changed on your proposal to what I think maybe you want to do, but we'll discuss that. I asked them to include as item 1A the executive summary from this report. Now, I'm not going to read the whole executive 6 pages to you, but I'm going to read part of it. I know how you love it when I read to you. I want, if we can, to go to the second page. It's up in front of you. I want to comment, and I ask these gentlemen to be here, and I want them to give input on these items as we talk about it, and they can just nod or they can add anything they want to.
Who wrote the plan? I just apologize. As
Hanson, you... Allen, Loosh.
Okay, that was my question.
And they wrote this over a year ago.
Yeah, about a year and 3 months.
It was issued to us in July of 23, and the city council, the previous city council, approved it.
That's right, okay.
And it's weighty. It's heavy, and the things that are in here I want to draw attention to. Not only for you, I'm sure you know it, and you saw it, and you could read it. But for the public and anyone who may be at home, and I'm going to speak about this often and regularly as I possibly can in the next while. So the second page shows system vulnerabilities, those things where we are weak. Item number 1, source water availability. Groundwater in the Cedar City Valley is being withdrawn at an unsustainable rate. Gary?
I don't think that's news to anybody.
First thing right out of the chute, it says it's unsustainable. Aquifer levels are declining, and many water rights held by the city are scheduled to be eliminated in the groundwater management plan for the area. Thank goodness we were able to buy some water rights, and the last council bought water rights that have made that much more tenable than the way it was at this point in time. Additionally, the city sources barely have physical capacity to meet peak day demands. I was talking to Jonathan today about putting 6 more elbows in our 20-inch line coming out of Quitchapa to put a chlorinator in there. Every elbow that you put in is static resistance and reduces the flow, and right now our line is just maxed out in the summer months. The pumps are going full blast. Most of the city groundwater is pumped at the Quitchapa well field. Groundwater in this area is stressed and declining. Developing more wells in the Quitchapa area does not appear feasible or responsible.
Can I just state that what I was commenting on is not well around the Quitchapa Lake. It's a well right up on the mountains across the fall system.
It is. It is. So, I don't, at any point...
We're just listening. We're listening.
Don't look at us.
Source redundancy. See, vulnerability number 2. We rely on 2 pipelines to convey water from the Quitchapa wells to the distribution center. Failure of either of these pipes would cause significant disruption in system operations and possibly cause a source deficit. You know, things will just happen. Wells break. Pipes break, T's break, valves break. Everything can happen. I'm skipping complicated operations. We have what we have. That's why we have Matt. He understands the system, and it is complicated. But once you understand it, it's not as bad as when you don't understand it. High pressure. Operating pressure is exceeding 300 PSI in some areas of the system. This creates a dangerous condition for operators and increases the likelihood of breaks and leakage. It also makes it difficult to find adequate equipment for pumping and chlorination. We had that discussion just an hour ago in my office with Jonathan and Paul. We're being ordered by the state to comply with their chlorination requirements, and we can't do it in the pipe we have. It's just too high a pressure. We can't inject it. We come close. And we've got some solutions. We'll be coming back very shortly with those two, but we don't have time to, we're given 6 months to solve this problem, or they start, I guess, fining us, is the way it amounts to. So we got to move very quickly. If the fire chief was here, limited fire flow, I don't know, I guess so. And then growth pressures, we're growing very fast. Next line, next item. Water rights acquisitions. Thank goodness we did acquire. Oh, that's a little different than the one I have. Mm-hmm. Mine's a very old report, I guess. Mine was the original. Maybe mine's a draft. It got bitter, I guess. We did some. Thank goodness we did it. I'm very grateful. Recharging groundwater, the wonderful idea in theory, and conservation. We should certainly be doing that. Well development program. Drill approximately 4 wells in different areas of the valley to take pressure off the Quitchapah well field and make use of additional water rights as they are acquired. Good job. And then the North well field. Now, that's on the agenda tonight. This is the very beginning, and a very small beginning, of what we have to do in the north. But that's what the item on the agenda is, to pick those wells. Drill a system of wells in the north area of Cedar City Valley where aquifer levels are good and impacts from the existing pumping are minimal. I don't know how minimal. They're growing a lot of hay out there. Construct a pipeline to deliver water from these wells to the distribution center. The north well field will take pressure off the Enoch and Quitchapah wells. Then it talks about the canyon water. And there's an opportunity, and we'll be getting a report from these same people here in the matter of a short time, I think, because they want their money, that'll describe what they suggest for the canyon. Going down, more pipelines are needed to create redundancy. Item number, or the wastewater effluent reuse, gadget that refines it to type 1 is being built. And import water. On mine, it's on there. Is yours, it's not on there? Is that the next one below water reuse? Oh, import water, it's there. Next page. And that is the Pine Valley water, which will be an essential part, I believe, in the not too far future that to handle this growth that seems to be coming our way. I wrote 10-year. Now, they gave us some estimates, and I hope you read those. Did y'all read those?
Oh, yeah.
Were they staggering?
Mm-hmm. It was staggering a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
They're still staggering.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments on our vulnerabilities, gentlemen, Jonathan, Matt? You want to say anything? Ryan?
You know, I think these points we've all known for a long time.
Yeah.
There are some short-term solutions, some long-term solutions that need to be sought to solve a lot of these issues. You know, we as a public works division is trying to look at some of the short-term issues, the pressures, the tank capacity, the excess storage, so that if we do have a line that breaks, we have a little bit of redundancy and a little bit of capacity that we can keep going until we can get it fixed. So we've always had that in our mind in public works and trying to do those short-term fixes. But the long-term fixes here are going to be, we all know that we're drawing that aquifer down quicker and we need to find new sources of water. But that's the $100 million question, is how do you find that water? You know, if it was easy, somebody would have found this years and years ago. And I think that's what the mayor is proposing in a lot of this is ways to go out there and try to find different aspects of finding that water. Something we need desperately is just how do we go about doing that and where do we come up with the funding to do it? So.
Like this slide. Mayor, I reached out to Hanson Allen and Lewis. I just pulled up and they sent me a few numbers. So our peak day capacity right now is 10,610 gallons per minute. So those are all the sources coming in, the wells, springs, into the culinary system. And then in 2023, the peak day demand was 9,949 gallons per minute. So we're close.
Yeah.
Very close. And then in 2033, it's projected to be 11,000 gallons per minute. So obviously over the next 10 years, we're going to exceed the capacity of the system, just simply by growth. Now, one good thing they did mention is that we're seeing good conservation. So over the last few years, our usage has been staying somewhat flat simply because of conservation, which is good. But the one thing we don't have right now is redundancy. So if we have a well go down, I think it was, what, Matt, 2 years ago, we had to go on voluntary restrictions. So that can happen if we have a well go down. And then, as the mayor's pointed out, there's 7 new wells that are recommended in this 10-year time frame going forward.
And we'd like a well that produces 1,000 gallons. When that pipe broke 2 years ago, I think it was a 20 by 14 T. It was not the T. It was just outside of the T. It was in the 14-inch pipe. And we were down for 24 hours. Is that about right? But we drained the tank before we got it shut off?
Almost.
tough work, Matt. Tough work. Well development. Anything else? Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, Ryan. Well development. Equip some wells. I assume these are wells within the current areas. $18,981. Then there's some other matters, tanks and so forth, going down to the bottom, going down to the top one, the Northfield. Construct 3 wells, approximately 6,400 feet of 18-inch diameter pipe, 1,150 feet of 8-inch diameter pipe, and a 400,000-gallon pump operating tank, and a pump station to supply water from the tank to the system for $82 million. I'm just blown away by that number. And I believe it can be done. We've talked about ways. I've talked to each one of you about ways to do that, and I think there are ways to do that for less money. I think it's important. Canyon Water will come later. There is a current need in Cedar City for sustainable long-term supply. Groundwater withdrawals are not sustainable, and we need to do that. And in the conclusion section, now I'd like to address that. We've been talking to. We can address it now. We can address it in closed session. I have a permission to do it either way. For Mr. LeBaron, you can decide how you want to address that. But to we're going to decide where to punch 3. Test wells. Test well does not provide 1 gallon of water. It tells us what's down there. And we'll get the results, and that will be fun. And that'll take us 6 more months to get the 3 wells drilled and the results from those delivered to us.
Can you, Jonathan, can you or somebody just explain for me so I fully understand on the mileage? That is the mileage from the point of test well to the nearest connection. What's it in reference to?
It's in reference to junction points. So,
okay.
For example, from well number 4 down to this junction. But then going south, it's the length down to where it would tie into the city system.
That's that 7 miles.
7 miles.
6.98.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. I just wanted to verify that. Thank you.
I believe that 7 miles gets from that point gets down. It's 3 miles up to well location 4 and 3 miles up to well location 5 and 6. Mile from well location 1. Those all feed into the main trunk line, right?
Yes.
I believe, Jonathan, as I've been studying this, that, of course, there's only a 16-inch pipe underneath the freeway. But once you get on the other end, other side of the freeway up to the tank, it's a 20-inch pipe, even though the pipeline from Enoch Wells to the freeway crossing is 18-inch pipe, only 16 going under, but 20 thereafter up to the tank.
It changes, the pipe size changes to 20 inch at Enoch well number one. So that's so that's the well down at the bottom by the hitching post. So it's 20 inch from that well to I-15, and then it's 16 inch going under I-15, and then it changes back to 20 inch.
And even though they say Enoch wells, those are our wells.
Yes.
They're just labeled Enoch well.
Yeah, okay. We just call them Enoch wells.
They're out of date.
So those are our wells. That's our pipeline.
Yes.
So we have capacity in that line.
Yes.
We just don't have capacity going under the freeway.
Right. Right.
And that's interesting. And Ryan and I went over the hill yesterday to see what kind of, we went from point A to point B, and it's an interesting road, to say the least. I think going up 130 is going to be easier than going over the mountain. And, you know, a couple of wells at Enoch, even if they're 1,500 gallons of water a minute, which is a really good well, we're nowhere near fill 20-inch pipe. We've got six out in Quitchapa that fill the 20-inch pipe. So gallonage. So I'm not sure how. You know, I think the first question is, are there any other comments or questions concerning the drinking water master plan that we've had for a year and a half?
Not on the master plan, no. No. But I think I'd be interested to know, is Mr. Cox here?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, is he here?
No. This guy's
Mr.
here.
Mervin's
I could say, I don't
okay.
Know
why is there
one guy in the back row that I don't know who he is? So
do I understand that he went out and did all of these on the same day? Is that correct?
He went and redid it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we went back out last Thursday and hit them all because we had gone out over 3 days to find all these. So it was good to go to all of them, you know, in one day. So.
Mm-hmm. And for my edification, what it said something, if it did this and the water was running faster, it was heavier. What does that mean? It just moved faster? Or I don't quite understand what that meant. It was heavier.
He defined it as it would check hard or checked heavy. And I think that was the pole or the cross of
okay.
the resistance. He
the resistance the rods. Was just, yeah. Okay. That's what my assumption was, but I wanted to make sure I understood.
It was interesting to hear what he does, how it works. It's interesting to thank you for including that.
Isn't it interesting? We went with another firm and their high electronics and all of their data and everything else, and we haven't been totally successful, and now we're going back to the old-fashioned way of looking for the water and serve the valley a lot of years that way.
Jonathan, could you remind us the bid that we received for these test wells? Because we discussed pilot well or pilot holes, test wells. I'm assuming pilot hole and test well is the same thing.
Yes.
It's kind of an interchangeable term. Okay.
Yeah.
How big of a pipe or how big is a test well? The ones that we bid out were how big?
So 12 and what was it, Shane? 12 and a quarter. 12 and a quarter inches.
That's a big test well, isn't it?
Fairly good size.
Yeah.
And does it, I guess here's my question.
I thought it was 14, and I thought that was because we needed it to be doing zone testing.
Yeah, we can do the zone testing with the 12. Yeah.
That's the smallest we can do with the
zone
testing.
Yeah, actually, we're not sure yet exactly what size they're going to drill, but we set a minimum of 12. It may end up being a 14-inch.
Okay.
But
the reason we did it is for the zone testing.
Yeah, so we can do the zone testing, and we've got 4 zone tests in there in the bid on each well, so we can test the water quality in each zone. As it goes up, the big concern out here is arsenic, and so we can test the water quality as we go down through the well.
And that's actually my concern. I'll be honest, that's my concern. After doing a little bit more research, and I've met with some people, and I've gone to the state's website and looked at drill and well logs and everything for that whole area. And I mean, I have my opinions on which ones I think are better, and that's my biggest concern with 2 and 3 is that we're still just going to hit the arsenic at 2 and 3 personally, but I don't know what
else
thinks.
So with the dousing, all he was looking for was quantity. We don't know.
He can't tell you where there's arsenic.
Yeah.
Just like they couldn't tell us that it was Moencopie up on the hill. We hit water, we just...
Yeah, like one thing, you know, a takeaway that I had, I spent some time yesterday,
there's never been, or there's no drill site or drill logs, at least on the state's website, fairly close at all to potential well site number one. And I think that's because it's on BLM, and so I think that's what's made it so a lot of people haven't gone in that direction. So that's actually the one I am personally most interested in seeing, is what now is potential well site number one.
Don't you think it would have been easier because they all had the private property just to drill what they needed on their property there?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that. But
you guys speaking to the mic there, Councilman.
Sorry. I'm just saying, I think that's what makes it interesting. That that's kind of an unexplored area, and so and right where it's right next to that big, where it's right next on the edge of that, I don't know what you call it, bluff or where all the stuff comes down. So
There's a large lava outcropping right there, and so there. I think there's good potential there of hitting some good gravel or rock in that area.
Well, I think we should spread our sample area so that like the Esplin property looked really promising because you could see willows and trees and meadow, which means there's water. We just don't know how deep or what quality. And if we do the one on the BLM property and then one in the middle, we have a cross-section of a larger cross-section of where we can tell where success is and is not.
So like 1, 2, and 5?
Yeah. So then we can hone in on where it is once we find it. I think if we drill close together, especially in those 2 and 3 sites, the geography and the land and the foliage is almost identical. The soil looked the same to me. I think we're going to get the same thing in those. Just my opinion. But.
And, Jonathan, don't we have from other wells a sample from about right there and then from Esplin's right up there?
Yeah, there was a trough there, I think. We looked at the TDS there. It was pretty. It was about 400 in the 400.
433. That water trough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We took a Coke bottle full of water and took it to the treatment plant. It was 433.
And where does that fall in the range?
Without the Coke.
Where does that fall in the range of good?
Explain that to the people that don't know what 433 means.
Is acceptable.
Yeah,
our Quitchfall wells are less than that.
And that's out of a cow trough. I drink out of those when I shower.
So you could have drank out of it, Councilman Phillips. Pipe. You said it looks good enough to drink.
No, it's the pipe that runs over and dumps into the crop.
So the state of Utah Department of Water Quality has 2 drinking water tiers. There's a primary standard and a secondary standard. TDS on the primary standard is below 500. Then you'll be within the primary standard for TDS. TDS on the secondary standard allows you to go up to 1,000 TDS. So this hits the primary standard. It's probably pretty good as far as TDS.
So can you test for arsenic out there too? I mean, what's the...
Yep, when you get water.
No, I mean out of that same pipeline.
Well, you probably wouldn't have it.
It's a shallow.
Because it's a shallow well.
Okay.
It is a shallow well.
It's got to be more than 30 feet, though, if the TDS is that low.
The Jordan well was 633. For TDS.
Okay.
But if it is there shallow, it would probably be there deep as well, right?
So out there, if you have arsenic shallow, you're going to have it deeper too.
Right. So it's simple enough to do a test.
But we already know that you're not generally going to see arsenic very shallow. It's once you get past, the other one was past 600 feet?
Yeah.
Is where we started to see the arsenic, so...
Yeah, and that's down there quite a ways.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we can all, I mean, I too like well site number one as a place that we should look at based on what I saw and what I heard, and it sounds like he believes the same thing, Mr. Cox.
Yeah, that was definitely his favorite, was number one.
Well, is it one on this or?
One on this.
That's on the BLM over on the east side of
the new number one, the potential number one. I'm sorry, not the original.
Okay.
I'm talking about the potential well number one. That's the one, and it also has a pretty good access road into it.
Yeah,
and it runs right next to the highway, so
easily. Power's not very far.
Yep,
seems to have the widest area of underground water movement, according to him.
It's interesting. I'm intrigued by number 4, but I know it's a long ways away.
Why?
You see all those pivots just to the north of it and all of that.
Yeah.
So you know there's water. There's something. Water.
Yes.
They're getting water.
It's no further than those others, though.
Pardon?
And if it's no further than these others on the other side.
Right.
So
and
I
you
mean,
don't have to build a road.
Well.
Right.
Just 3 miles of pipe either way.
Well, yeah.
But, and I guess here's a question, is it cheaper to build pipe along a highway or is it cheaper to build pipe out through the middle of sagebrush? And that's a legit question. I don't know.
If we own the land and have access to it, it's probably easier in the desert.
Okay. Fair.
But if we don't own the land, it's probably in a right-of-way on a road, it's easier, right?
That's right. Yeah.
The benefit to going farther to the west is you are more likely to pick up more of the Coal Creek watershed rather than just the north drainage. The well number four isn't going to get, it's a more limited watershed. So, I mean, you can pull from it if there's water, but as far as ability to expand that system, you know, and drill more wells, if there's good water at well number four, that's great, but you're not, you know, you probably wouldn't drill additional wells right there long term, right? Whereas farther west, you're picking up more subsurface watersheds. So, I mean, there's a trade-off. If the quality's good, and you know, that's great. But
I just wonder how much clay we might hit out here, or how much silt and all that.
Yeah, I worry about the arsenic and the clay and stuff.
I don't know
out there.
And that's, yeah.
Because it's more fill. I mean, it's geographically, you can look at it. All through 2, 3, 5, that's all fill, where 1 and 4 right up against the hillside, they're not going to be the same silty fill.
That Esplin one had a lot of pea gravel in the soil, just beyond the road beyond it, yeah. And which I think is better than the alluvial plain that we're seeing on what was the original 2 and 3, what is it now?
Jonathan, I read your notes. So if we were to switch away from 1, 2, and 3, what would be our process with KVP? Is it KVP? Am I saying KVP?
Yeah.
KP.
KP. KP Ventures.
KP Ventures.
Yeah, KP Ventures.
Okay. What would be the process if we switched sites?
So they did say if we switched sites, there probably would be a little bit of a change order because there may be additional water hauling that's needed, and also the geology may be different.
Okay.
So we'd have to discuss that with them. They said if we keep those same locations but just change the order, then there wouldn't be a change order. But if we change locations, then there might be additional cost.
I think right now we're not talking about changing locations. We're just talking about changing the order of preference, right?
Well, meaning if we went away from site 1, 2, or 3, if we said 1, 2, and 5, 5 wasn't included earlier, so that would include a change order.
Got it. Okay.
Feeling that 3 is too close to 2, that maybe we'll get the same.
I mean, from
results.
Staff's perspective, and maybe those of you that, you know, that met with Mervin or Mr. Cox, is there any reason? I mean, talk us through your opinion on 2 and 3 versus.
Yeah, you're the water people. Tell us what you think.
I think if 2 or 3, you know, look bad, I don't know.
They would look bad?
If they did, that would be discouraging to move to the next.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't do 2 and 3. If 2 was bad, there's no reason to do 3, in my opinion.
Right.
Because it's
right.
The same geology, the same flat, the same foliage, just a little distance.
I think if 1 looked good and we then moved over to 2 and it was bad, you might want to go look at 4.
Yeah.
Just stay out of that area.
Well, I think, again, back to my original point, we start at the BLM at 4.
Do that one, you mean?
Do the one, well,
do one of
on
ours.
The on the old one, yeah. So do one, and then do 2 or 3, and then do the one on the Esmo property. We get a good cross section of in different 2 basins, right? And 2 drainages, basically.
And more likely we can.
And more likely we can figure out where the water is.
And the better water.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and with 4, I think it's the closest of all these to current ag wells. So. There's water at 4. It's just whether or not.
You're talking about the old 4?
The new 4.
The new 4.
Thank
the one
you.
On the
screen. Sorry, the new 4.
Potential well 4.
Yeah.
They should have numbered them the same.
Sorry. There's probably water there, but what it is and quantity, nobody knows. But the other ones are all, there wasn't much out there.
2 and 3 didn't change, though, the number.
No, it didn't.
No.
Well, I think we can all agree that we should perhaps go after number 1 here.
Yeah.
Start with.
Yeah.
Question is, do we go for 2 or do we go for 3? Do we go further west?
I would say 2, and then if we're going to go farther, go 5.
That way, then go to the Esplin property. That way you have kind of both extremes, and you have one kind of in the middle.
Could we have our arsenic-y well?
Where's it at?
Where is it at on this map?
See the little.
Could you point with the laser?
It's like right here.
It's right there. Okay. So.
Okay, it's quite a ways away.
Yeah, but that's upstream of the two and three.
It's in that block right down there.
See, that's what concerns me about two and three. It's like if that one was bad, that stuff. You can look at a map. That all that stuff just keeps going that same direction. It goes right through there.
And that's where like five and six are. I'm a little more optimistic too because it does pick up kind of a different profile. So I would wonder if, you know, if we're doing one and then two or three. And then, yeah, we do five or six as well, I think would give us a different profile because it's different. I know it looks close, but, I would think, like, I can't remember what was mentioned before, but like, one, two, and five I think might be a good way to get
And that's basically what you were talking about.
Profile.
Correct.
I think it wasn't that potential well two, wasn't that his strongest?
Yeah, the
two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Which puts us more in the middle so that we get a good cross section of discovery.
This well three is a little closer to our road that goes down, or that road that's there, so it might be easier to just follow that road down without property owners. But
And then also remind me, Jonathan, with our contract currently as it sits, I mean, so if we drill one, then we're not signing up for one, two, or three wells all at the same time, right? Like, we'll do one, we'll see how it goes, or how does that work? I can't remember.
They're going to do one at a time.
Okay.
Do one at a time.
And we're able to, if we decide we get through two and we're like, okay, we could pull off the third one and they'll take that out. We're only paying for what we
just pay for what we do.
Okay.
Or if we find awesome water in two, then we're good.
I guess the reason what I'm saying is there a chance that we go one, go to five,
and then back to the middle?
Well, but if five's bad, what are the chances?
You have to remember that we don't have a right of way. We're going to have to negotiate with the Espens. They're willing to work with us,
but
there's going to be a price to drill wells on their property, I'm sure.
I understand that. I guess what I'm saying is, just looking at this, is if one's good, let's say, or one, and we go to five or six. If those are bad or super arsenic-y, what are the chances that two and three are even worth it?
Probably.
I agree with that.
Do you think the arsenic's going to stop?
I mean,
it'd be on past it, but it's not going to be in the middle?
Yeah, no, I agree.
It won't be on our property. It'll be on somebody else's,
I know.
Right?
I mean, what would you think about that, Shane? I mean, if five and six are arsenic-y, two and three are going to be too.
I think the issue with the well that we drilled last year is we didn't have very good formation. It was a lot of sand, so.
And it looks more like the topography of two and three there, right?
Yeah. I guess you never know what underground actually looks like, but I think it'll be a lot more promising if we see more gravels in these wells. So the water, it would actually be flowing, and we're not.
Oh, yeah. That's the ideal thing, obviously. Lots of gravel. Some boulders.
Yeah.
Because I guess what I'm thinking at is if we did one, and then we went to five or six, and it was arsenic-y and it didn't work, then instead of going two or three, maybe we say, well, we still have the money to do one more. What if we go to four at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you're right.
I think it also depends on what your negotiations are with Esplin.
Correct.
Right.
If he's going to want $200,000-$300,000 to do that, you could do this one and not.
Exactly.
True.
Yep. It's all going to depend what those negotiations are.
I think the challenge is two and three. On that Esplin property, it's more of a confluence of different drainages, whereas the two and three is still south of that, where you're going to have a similar profile to what's down south of there.
Had a bunch coming in this way and this.
We'll have some appraisal estimates back for Esplin's property early next month. So you'll know.
Okay.
Next month, February.
So move forward on one.
And to do that, he's already told me that he says, you get me a proposal and I'll take him to my board. We meet once a month. So you could drill the new number one, the new number two, or the new number three. By the time they get those drilled, we would know whether we're in, have any opportunity on Esplanade.
Can I make one comment?
Yeah, you can come. This is a work meeting.
You got to come to the microphone, Gary, because the people online can't.
And you got to tell us your name again.
I'm Gary F. Player again, still.
Barnesworth.
Player. Yeah. I just wanted to tell you, I didn't know you guys were even doing this tonight when I came. I came just to see how the city council was doing. So it's not like I'm here trying to argue with you about what you're suggesting. But I would suggest that I've been recommending a well at Woods Ranch Park for 15 years. It's underlain by almost 2,000 feet of sandstone. You know, as you drive up the canyon, you see all the stuff, and it's all underneath Woods Ranch. So I would like maybe that to be added as an alternative because it's got a lot of potential.
It's a heck of a place to get a pipeline out of.
But you got Cold Creek across the road.
You do.
Let it flow.
Oh, yeah, you do that. Yeah. We're not using Cold Creek very well either.
So one. Well, I like skipping 2 and 3 for now, but.
Well, you don't have to vote this week.
Right. This is just discussion. This is just discussion.
All right. Yeah. Good reminder. Okay.
Is there anything else we need to be reminded of or spoken to? Matt, anything?
The 900-pound elephant in the room, Mr. Phillips, is Rush Lake, right in the middle of all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have water samples within the approved amount. I feel like. And we probably will discuss this in closed session, but we have opportunities to obtain wells at low risk in the Rush Lake area. And I feel like very firmly that we should, given the severity of our issues, we need at least 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 gallons, or we'll never build that 10 million plus pipeline from out there without water to put in it. And I feel very firmly that we need to make an offer. We've had offers made to us, and we've picked them apart, and that's fine. You have every right to do that. But I think that it's due for a counter offer from the city of what we would do.
And are we discussing that now?
Can do. I always worry when I get in closed session, and as soon as we start discussing something, they say, wait a minute, that should be done in an open meeting. That should be in the open forum. So you can talk. I've asked.
I'm in favor of, instead of doing the whole cake or pie or whatever you want to call it with him, doing a piece at a time and agreeing on one piece at a time and seeing how it goes and then agreeing on the next piece.
Can I actually just ask? Randall, what's your opinion? Closed session or now?
Yeah, so two things. Let me start and then reverse. You don't have that option in the closed session today. Your closed session today is only for reasonably imminent litigation. It's all me.
Okay.
So that's all you can do in closed session today. But the other part, you do have a pretty broad agenda item, discussion regarding North Watershed test well locations. So you're within that broad statement if you wish to discuss it now. Your ultimate question is if you want to not discuss certain things that monetary amounts, what you may or may not be willing to offer, discussing a counter offer that you may or may not offer during an open meeting is probably a bad idea because then they'll know where you're negotiating from. That's the whole purpose of doing that in a closed session. So if you're really wanting to discuss a counter offer, you can take the risk. You can discuss it in this meeting, but it is a little dangerous to show all your cards.
Well, the other thing that I learned, I appreciate that, Randall. The other thing I learned since our discussion in closed session, we don't have to pack that well if it comes up and the test tests bad. So we were under the assumption we had to put that money into it, and we don't. They can do the test well, and we can get a water sample. We have zero risk.
That sample only shows us quality, not volume.
Quality, not volume. Quantity. So once we get the quality off the table, then we've got to pack it and do the volume test.
But in a 12 or 14 inch well, you can get some volume ideas out of it.
You can. They can see what the
drawdown does.
Yes.
With what you can take out of it, if it's not being affected, there's more.
And so that gave me a little more comfort in that, because we really have very little risk to the quality point. Anyway, it's just my two cents.
Hang in there, guys. This is only item one.
I'm looking at my youth council kids going, wow.
Thank you, Mr. Cox.
But if we do want to do it in closed session, it'd have to be next week.
Yes. I know. I get, I mean, anything that's, I think, I mean, that's why we have closed session, is so we're on the best footing. I think we've adequately discussed the policy issues surrounding this, and it comes down to what do we want to negotiate, and I would rather we do that and put the city on the best footing in a closed session.
I would agree 100%.
So would I.
Okay, if you'll place that on closed session for next week.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming, gentlemen. You can go home. If you're done, I think you're done. I don't know if you're done. Item number two, consider an easement for Nathan Blocker for a private well on city property.
I'm Jay Adams.
Go to the mic, Mr. Adams. Get right into that microphone so the people at home can hear you.
Okay, I'm Jay Adams. This is Nathan Blocker, the owner of the property that we're trying to get the easement for. I'd like to maybe change the scenario just a little bit on that 110 by 110, because after thinking about it and talking with Nathan, he only needs 30 by 60 feet. The reason I did the 110 was to comply with the protection zone for anything that might pollute the well. So that, just wanted to bring that up first.
So maybe we should tell you what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So Mr. Blocker bought some property up Cedar Canyon. It's kind of up across the creek from Rusty's, south of Rusty's. I think there was an existing well, or there was an existing well with the property. It's up on the hillside. And they drilled the well. They thought it was on their land, but it's 7 feet over into our property. We're the neighboring property owner. So what he's seeking is a long-term easement or just purchase of a little tiny piece of property from us so he can have his well to, in the future, build his cabin or whatever he wants to build up there.
Did you get good water out of your well?
To the truth, I don't even know. I bought the well. The property was with the well, and
When you say access, is this by a vehicle, by a truck, by a 4x4? What kind of access do you need?
Well, it's the
well is the on well city is property.
I know. I realize that. I do realize that.
I don't need any access. All the access is on my property.
Okay.
Yeah, so there is no
electrical and everything else. Yeah.
He needs the, what do you call it, the protection zone around the well, so that.
Yeah.
And I really don't need, because you can't develop that property in any way. It's on a cliff, basically. So I'm not really, you can't contaminate it. At least the city couldn't. I could, I guess, but.
We could start running sheep up there, and, you know, that's...
Do we have the topography of where that's at?
Not presently.
Because, I mean, it's not really worth much to the city if it's a ledge on the city's property, right?
Right.
And so what we were sent is different than what you're requesting now. You're saying what you're requesting now is less than what?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that was alluded to in the document.
Partly. So when they first came to us at sketch meeting, they were requesting a 100-foot wide easement along the entire eastern edge of our property for access and everything else. We asked them to kind of go back to the drawing board and said, hey, there's a road already on yours. So then they went back and said, yeah, we really only need just around the well, but that was the more 100-foot still around the well. So that's the last one I gave you.
Right.
They're now suggesting, if I'm understanding Jay correctly, yeah, shrink that even more. So now we'd go to a third option, smaller than even the last one.
Mm-hmm.
I still run into the same concern, which is we're not allowed to give gifts other than to, you know, not for profits that we do. So we still need to know that what they're going to pay us is equal to or greater than what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one update I promised you, is if there were any appraisals,
right,
I would bring those to you. There is not an appraisal on this, and if I understand it correctly, what they're hoping is that the city council will be willing to accept an amount that you think is there without making them pay, how much were you being told for an appraisal? $3,500?
Oh, around three.
About $3,000 for an appraisal.
Which is probably...
That's what they cost, so I mean...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, which is, I believe, in excess of what that small of a piece would be worth. I mean, I could be wrong. If we're giving, if it's simply an easement and not a grant of land, and we're talking 1,800 square feet on a cliff...
I did ask, they went up and talked to Jonathan, and then Jonathan and I talked about it as well. It's like, do we have any appraisals that we could compare relatively recently?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The one Jonathan had, and again, keep in mind, we are not appraisers, so this is a bit of me playing into a field I have no experience in, so take that as it will. So they did an appraisal for our expansion or addition to the trail system north of Canyon View High School. So this is a... something you guys approved previously to do that. And one of those did it, get an assessment. In that assessment, they acknowledged the property on that one was basically the entire thing was a retention basin.
Right.
And so it was a more or less unusable property other than as a retention basin because it's committed to that by what the city's already required. In those comparable properties, they included cliff hillside properties. Not so much in Iron County, those were more in St. George. But that did kind of give him his fair comparisons between the two, if that makes sense.
Roughly how much per acre for those?
So full property, what they averaged for ours was $15,000 per acre.
Mm-hmm.
And then for trails as an easement, because they have different levels of how they calculate easements, they put it at about 75% of that value.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at about, what was it, $12,000 and change, I think. I had it on a post-it note. I forgot to bring it
in. And that included the cliff property, or is there a different?
The cliff ones were actually higher, but they downgraded those in value because they were much more like St. George higher values than what they were expecting.
So they could rock climb or they had some recreational value.
I don't know. Yeah.
And we are at 1,800 square feet. Sorry, it was 30 by 60, correct?
Yeah. So this is.
I've got roughly $3,800.
How much?
No, 180, not 1,800 square. 180
square feet.
So $380.
That's about what you're.
No, doing. It would be 1,800.
Right?
Eighteen hundred square feet. 60 will give you 1,800.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 3,825.
30 by 60.
15 grand per acre.
30 feet by 60 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is 1,800.
That's smaller than a house.
1,800 square feet.
Depends on your house.
Okay.
Bigger than my house's footprint. But
yeah, bigger than mine, too.
Times.
My Idaho math matched with the calculator.
Two? Just back when we allowed smaller houses, but.
So that then becomes your question. You're not allowed to go lower than what it's worth.
Right.
So if you are comfortable.
How much was it per acre? 15?
Yeah.
15, but times that
that's
by 12. 7.5.
I thought it was 12 for a...
Right.
It's more like a trail.
How many feet in an acre exactly? Square
43,
feet?
43,560.
43,560.
1,125 is what we were paying per acre for that easement.
So 43,560 divided by 15,000 square feet, or sorry, 15,000 per acre times 0.75 times 1,800 square feet for this piece is... $39.20 and $0.40.
So that becomes your question. One of the things I would note, and again, remember I'm not an appraiser. In this one on the one up north, Cody Hymas does a great job. Sales pitch right there, right?
If you extend it out, it's like 30.
In that, he included kind of a table that shows how they value easements and how much they take. And he listed trails as one of the highest ones because when we put a trail in, they can't do much elsewhere, right? This one, you could argue, is probably less than that because we're still going to be able to drive by within 10 feet of his well and not care.
We just can't dump mechanical grease and stuff
right.
like that.
Right. So there'll be some limited uses that we probably will never use it for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you could look at that and say, well, does that make you comfortable that we're applying a higher easement cost to what is likely going to be less, and say if he pays that dollar amount you just said, that's, if you believe that's equal to or greater than what an appraisal would say, accept it and you're good.
Yeah, I think we can just accept it.
$3,920.40.
That's
1,800 square feet.
Your numbers are wrong.
Yeah, I calculated closer to 3,600.
Really?
Yeah.
So 43,560 divided by $15,000 per acre.
No, you've got to divide that by 1,800. That gives you the ratio of 0.24, and then you take that times 15,000.
Wait. So no, because I was, because that's how you get the.
You can get it.
I'm comfortable with that because I hope this property that the city owns never is developed. I hope we preserve our canyon, so I'm more than fine with that.
Okay, so is there a...
I don't know how the rest of the council feels.
Is there a dollar amount you're comfortable with?
That's, well, I do the math completely different than they do, so...
What does your math come out to, Mr.
I would take 1,800 square feet, and then I would divide that by 43,560, which comes out to 0.04 of an acre.
Yep.
0.0413, and then if you times that by $15,000 an acre, that comes out to $619.
It's 34.4 cents per square foot.
Wait.
And if you take that times 1,800,
I like the $3,000 better.
I did feel like that was high.
$619.
Could I make a suggestion?
Yes.
If the council's amenable to selling it to Mr. Blocker. The easement.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you direct staff to come back with a number next week where staff can do the calculations, bring you the price, and then we'll go.
And also negotiate and talk with them about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, great.
I think that's a very good idea, and
let's move on.
I would suggest that's what we should do.
That?
But yeah, I got one.
That's
I did
fine.
A per square foot, and it's like 600.
We all good with that?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Thank you. Mayor, I think we're ready to move on.
No, I think they'll be back on work because we're going to look at it.
I appreciate working with Randall and Jonathan. They're really I came in last minute, and they spent time with me that they probably didn't have, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adams.
Thank you.
Item number 3, a public hearing to consider an ordinance for a zone change from annex transition, AT, to dwelling single-unit R1, for property located in the vicinity of 1200 North, 3900
Here
West.
We are.
Hello, John Ashdown.
It's missing
up. Just here to
operations on the county.
Answer any questions if I can.
How wide is this property? I remember when we brought it back in.
Very narrow, yeah. It's long and narrow. It's 42 acres. But it's in a big long strip.
How do you plan to develop it for R1?
There's a picture right there.
There we go.
What we're doing is splitting this between 7 siblings. So each sibling's going to get one of those sections that you see there.
In prior meetings, it was discussed. It was really a formality to divide the land to give to those that inherited it.
Yeah,
There's really no plans to build on at this point, and it's the lowest density.
Which brother?
And
yeah.
So
it's 3.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
It is.
It matches the general plan.
Yes.
So.
And it matches the general plan, so
there's no reason.
Even better then. So.
This is one of the staff should have...
Can we put this on... No, we can't put it on consent. Zone.
No, I've got a public
Anybody
hearing.
Anybody public hearing, too. Sorry.
Yes.
Which brothers are 3, 8, and 9? Because they're getting cheated. You don't like them very much.
Those are the ones we don't like. No.
That's the redheaded stepchild.
How many siblings?
This is a pup. This is
7, 8 and 9 are together. 2 and 3 are together.
There you go.
Okay. There you go. Makes more sense now.
Yeah.
Good job. This is a public hearing. I'll open the public hearing. See if there's anyone here to speak. Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, and we'll put that on work.
Action, because it's an ordinance.
That generation, that's the way
it
works. Yep.
Yeah, exactly, you're right.
And the oldest boy gets it all.
Right. Item number 4, public hearing to consider an ordinance amending the city's trail master plan in the vicinity of 1200 North, 3900 West.
Same piece of property.
Yeah, they're just moving it to match the drainage so that they don't have to have one on each side.
So tell us about the master plan trail. Where does it go?
Currently, it's shown on the south side of the property, which follows. There's a large irrigation ditch on that south side.
Mm-hmm.
And so the request here is to move it to the north side of the property, which would follow the new roadway.
And so we felt, if and when that was developed, it would just be a 4-foot extension of the sidewalk.
It'd be a, yeah, well, a 6-foot extension.
Or 6-foot extension of the sidewalk. Yeah. Thank you, yes. It goes from 4 feet to 10 feet.
Yeah.
It has to be a 10 feet. Now they're looking for 12.
Yeah.
So it'd be a, yeah, it'd be a widened sidewalk through there. And we feel like that's a better place for it because people would be able to use it better along the roadway there.
Can you tell me, the red lines are what's the proposed? Tell me what's
current.
Existing. That's proposed.
Okay. Yeah. And where does it connect to in the master plan, to the east?
Well, I should say this is the current master plan.
Yeah.
This is the current master plan, but it's not constructed yet.
No, I realize that.
Jonathan, zoom out.
I'm trying to see where it connects over on the east.
So Lund go back
Highway.
To
Lund Highway.
Okay.
And part of that's already covered, which will have the trail next to Lund.
That actually makes a good point. How is that house being built right there if they didn't build the trail?
So it's just going to make a little
covered the irrigation
transition as you cross 3900.
Yeah, they would just have to go up 3900 a little ways, and then it probably makes sense to widen the sidewalk for a little bit on 3900 to make that transition.
And that's better for you?
Yeah, because the new road will be on the north side where there's already a storm drain underneath.
Oh. And so you just connect to the sidewalk.
Yeah, they'll just likely follow that new.
Otherwise, they have to disrupt both sides of their property.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that big ditch is there. Just put it alongside the ditch.
Well, once they cover the
except
ditch,
you have to
them over
dig
it
up, compact it, have it all compaction tested. It's a racket.
Do they?
So.
Tell us how you really feel.
I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's a big problem.
Probably a land.
I'm good with it.
Yeah.
I have no problem.
But if they live it here, they still give you the land.
Were all the neighbors notified, Randall?
You don't have to build a sidewalk. Yeah, this is also a public hearing. I'll open that now. And see, no one will close that. And
there we go. There's the new.
Put on action.
So they would build a sidewalk. You just
yes.
Well, there I guess that is a little annoying how it doesn't line up anymore, but oh well.
Well, and again, keep in mind, these are general plans. So if in the end it literally, if you follow the road they're planning now, it'll still match because it goes across the intersection, and then it'll just head kind of northwest as the road goes, right? That's the kind of plan.
Oh, that's right, because their road starts and then it curves up.
Right. Yeah. So even though we have it straight and 90-degree angles here, they don't need to come back to you to change that slope a little bit.
It follows the
on the map.
I understand. Yeah, so that'll go in action, right?
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 5, consider cemetery expansion plot pricing. Mr. Nielsen? Mr. Pearson?
Anthony Pearson with Cedar City Parks Department. What we are requesting is to open up sales to the new plat end that had been expanded on last year. The grass is filling in and we're ready to open those up, and we are requesting that we open those up at $800 for residents and $16 for non-residents. However, we do want to maintain the current fee schedule for all of the older plats. We have about 800 left in the cemetery scattered around, so we want throughout, and so we want to encourage the sale of those at the current price.
Do you allow in the new part the double the stacking?
We don't have any stacking.
Is what do we need to do to get that, or is there
unless
something?
It's child and parent?
Correct. Yeah.
So spouses cannot.
Correct.
No.
Because of the okay.
Why is that?
That would conserve a lot of those. I mean,
that's something I would have to look into. That's just how it's been since I've been here. I just never allowed it, and I'd have to look at some of the ordinances, see if there's a better reason why. But I think it's something.
It is.
Yeah, there are.
Right, right. It's,
yeah, and I'm stacking up at the Veterans
Cemetery. Yeah, the Veterans Cemetery, that's where they stack. And they cause it, and I know for them they have to plan ahead, right, because the vault is
the
deeper.
Yeah. Correct.
In order to facilitate that, so if that's part of the issue. But I don't think – we don't pre-install the vaults, do we?
No, that's the – that's the family's
as the family purchases, right. Yeah, they go through the vault company.
Would we even have the equipment to – dig
to reach
deeper?
The depth? I'd have to see what the depth is. Currently, our backhoe should be fine.
I mean, I would think.
No, extend a hose.
But it's something we've brought up a couple times between me and now the new sexton that you guys will meet next week. And so it's probably going to be a conversation on the table in the future.
Is that just primarily to save space in the cemetery?
Generally, yeah.
Because you have the same headstone for
The same headstone.
Typically,
instead of the double wide plots, you're sitting on a single. Just
And everyone's happy as long as no one
remarries.
Pricing,
yeah, pricing.
You're not buying two, right. So the pricing will be different.
Yeah.
Why? Well, you're still having to dig it up again the next
time. Well, you're open and closed feet and paint wise.
So you're putting a vault below so the other one will fit, and then you dig down to that vault and put the new vault and put it in. Right. Or you put a double vault and open up the top and put a bolt.
And truthfully, we don't make any money off of this.
Not even close, right?
That $800 fee does not cover the cost of building the cemetery and maintaining it forever, right?
Correct.
And so it's more sustainable than to allow spouses to stack because at least they're taking up one spot instead of two, if they want that, right? It's not like we're forcing anyone to, but.
I mean, it adds longevity to the limited space that our cemetery has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's really a separate issue. You'd have to come back and after some study and address with this.
We'd have to look into that.
Because right now what you're talking about is just price.
What kind of requirements and whatnot there are for it.
Sure.
So.
Long term, it saves the city cost in a no revenue situation by being able to stack them. We have less to water, we have less to maintain, have,
And the cemetery is going to last longer in terms of availability. Right.
Mm-hmm. Less time we have to go acquire new land somewhere else or get land and turn it into a cemetery.
We'd probably also want to talk to the vault companies to make sure that they even make double deep vaults as well. I'm sure
they do. They have them at the veterans. They have them all over, yes.
And those were trucked in from out of nowhere, but Southern Utah Vault Co. and St. George provides everywhere from, I think, Overton all the way up to Nephi almost. So we just want to make sure that they...
Well, that's why you can come back and share that with us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So right now, really what we're talking about tonight is just the pricing.
Correct.
Yeah.
It looks like it's comparable to where we're looking. I mean, I still think...
It's very...
The non-resident fee, I mean, again, this is something that we just want to, if we're seeing, if we start seeing, more than half of our inventory being taken up by non-residents, we might want to increase that. But last we had heard, it was a small number.
Yeah, pretty limited. And that's also including Iron County and Enoch residents.
Right, exactly.
And Cedars, right?
So. And your thought process in leaving the other ones at the same price is that you're trying to maybe infill those and get people to buy those because it's cheaper.
Yeah, we're hoping to.
Because everybody likes the new and shiny.
Vacant spots, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, one thing, recently going through this with the death of our child, with the infield stuff, there's not very many doubles left, right? That's part of the problem is it's it's a lot of singles.
Other than, a middle section in one of the, Plat M right before it? Yeah.
That was the problem. So we have a lot of singles. These ones that are remaining are...
Well, if we could make them doubles, they'd sell.
Yeah.
That's definitely true.
We do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just tonight. Unless the water table's too high, or there's some other.
Yeah, and that's stuff we'll have to look at. I think it's something great to look at, especially for the future and some of those other plots that are open around the cemetery. If that's the problem.
The singles will be harder to sell.
Well, to go along with that, we're having people tell us that they'd rather be in the new section than this other. So
yeah,
I think if you open up the new section, they're just going to continue to funnel it that way. So we need to make it enticing to get these, because they've been available for a long time and they just keep going west. They just keep purchasing west. So our thought is if we have it at a different price, maybe we can entice some sellers.
Is that just is it mostly people just trying to buy multiple, to be close to family and kids?
I would bet
that's one of various reasons why they don't want to be in the older section.
Well, when I went through the map, we tried to find two in the older section. I don't think there really is any.
Well, also the older section, and we're working on that. They've got the larger trees, and the road's been torn up and things, but all that's going to be changing with the new irrigation system. So it'll have a feel and everything of as new as part of the rest of the cemetery, just how with the older headstones is all it's going to have when we're done.
Yeah.
The Hatfields didn't want to be buried next to the McCoys. Yeah.
I'm fine with this. Are you guys okay if we put this on consent?
I am.
It needs a resolution. Oh, I apologize. Right. So I will draft a resolution for you next week.
Dang it.
I'd really like to have you do some research on stacking. I think that's going to be a good long-term solution.
Sorry, Anthony, does non-resident count as Cedar and Enoch in the county, too? Or do they count as?
So anybody outside of city is city.
You have to be in Cedar limits.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
So hurry and buy it now if you're moving.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, you're on.
Item number 6.
Oh, look at me. I got mine.
I know.
Consider change order number 1 to AIP 048 AARFF apparatus.
Good evening, city staff, mayor, council. I'm here for our aircraft rescue fire truck.
And you are who?
Sorry, Tyler Galecka, airport manager. Thank you. So we're here for the aircraft rescue fire truck, and good news is Chief Phillips is actually, I think he's back already, but he was just barely at the Rosenbauer factory doing our second to last inspection on the new fire truck.
Oh, good.
And they should be shipping it next week.
Awesome.
So yeah, we're excited to get that new truck. It'll be a couple weeks till it's in service and parked in the station. So as we were going through it, there was one change that Chief Phillips was requesting. And then when we first spec'd out this truck, we were using the older style AFFF foam that has the forever chemicals in it. We've since transitioned to the new F3 foam that does not have these forever chemicals in our existing truck. And so now we're looking at getting some extra money from the FAA to cover the cost difference for the new foam instead of the old foam that was supposed to come with it. So there has been a little bit of changes to the numbers, and I will provide that right now. So the old foam was looking at $3,900. Will we reimburse that amount? And the new foam was showing $10,020 for a tote of 265 gallons. But we got a revised quote, and that new number will actually be $11,512 to receive that new tote of the new foam. Additionally, another line item on this that we're having added to this change order that we're sending to the FAA is a $500 roller for the ladder on top to pull it down easier. That's one thing that Chief Phillips advised to add while he was there at the factory the past 2 days. So
That will change our 5% from $303 to maybe $500.
$403.10.
Yeah.
And then the new total cost would be $8,062, 95% covered by the FAA, and they have already given us a soft approval. We're just finalizing that with them.
Great. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yep. Can we put this on consent?
Yes.
Thankless. Put this on consent.
Wow, we got two?
One.
Oh, we only have one?
Item number 7.
I thought we had one other.
Well, no.
Oh, my gosh.
Item number 7, consider change order number 6 to the AIP-049 terminal.
All right, Tyler Gleck, airport manager. So change order 6, we visited this one last council agenda. One of the items, which you all did approve, it wasn't officially sent to the FAA yet, and they wanted to blanket it with more of these other change orders. So item 6-1 was what we talked about last time.
Mm-hmm.
So 6-2, and that was for the TSA electrical. So 6-2 is replacing some old track lighting that was in the hallway with new can-style lights. The track lighting's rough, it's beat up, it's old. We'd like to see some more, you know, decorative inset lights for the displays that we have in the hallway. And that cost was, $4,298. 6-3 is wind girts. We had a lot of conversation about this. It's supposed to support the windows on the new gate area, the tall storefront windows. Better from the foundation of the building. So
they don't vibrate? Or
if you have any extreme winds, substantial weather, that the windows won't cave in, supposedly.
We don't get wind here, though, so it's okay.
Never. We have them in the existing part of the building, so it'd match
the north
what we
side
have
or
existing.
The south side?
North.
Be the north, which is...
So why wasn't that thought through when they originally did the design?
So what happened with the storefront subcontractors, the way it was designed, you have a 2-foot stone wall at the bottom, and then the windows go up from there. Mm-hmm. If it's designed all the way to the floor and it's built into the window structure, you supposedly don't have to do that. But because it's on that pedestal wall, our engineers didn't catch that. You either have to put we could go back and put more steel supports in the existing wall that they already built.
You covered
or add
it.
These wind girders.
You covered it. They didn't catch it.
Yes, correct. So it is a $10,000, $10,250.
How much do you pay these stinking engineers to
A lot of money.
Right, John?
Okay.
Next one. This was something that we requested, and so I'm asking you as a council if we can proceed with this. That'll be the next item. This one's a foam expansion joint, also missed in the plans. $10,929 for more foam expansion joints. We do need them, but they were missed.
Yeah, we can't build this expensive thing without these expansion joints.
Correct.
Frustrating,
yep.
But
very frustrating. But yeah, we are where we're at, and they're building it, and we can't really go backwards. So, item 6.5 is an additional security door. This would be the last door that we need to complete on the whole building inside the terminal. It's a SkyWest door to add access controls to. So if we were to go with a larger airline, we would need to add this extra door in to give us a full secure wall. So the extra cost would be $6,189. I know it's still a substantial amount of money. However, if we do go with a larger airline, I'd prefer the FAA to pay 95% of it versus us paying 100% of it.
Oh, yeah.
So. And then the last item was kind of more of a beautification. There's an old spot of the terrazzo flooring that's in the new sterile area. It looks kind of rough, and it's the only piece in there that's terrazzo. It's the old exit lane from the aircraft, and so we're requesting to put carpet down instead. They'd leave the terrazzo where it is, put carpet over it, and make it transition smoothly instead of having just one small rectangle of the old existing terrazzo flooring. They did have to put an electrical box in it as well, so they did cut it up.
Oh, they did? Oh,
yeah.
So it's not even attractive.
Correct. It's not attractive at all. So we're hoping that leaves us a little bit of extra carpet to work with at the end, too. So, sorry, a lot of little items on there, but the total cost increase would be $39,013 for the grant.
So this project's gone up about $250,000 from original.
Correct. I'd like to say we don't anticipate much more, but we are nearing the end of the project.
Yeah.
So.
When's your estimated completion date?
They were looking at the 1st of May. I shouldn't say this, but they're looking at...
Don't be saying it.
They're looking at...
No.
I won't say it, so...
Don't say it.
Beginning of May.
All right. Very good. We got to do it, guys. We don't have a choice.
Right. Well...
And we're only 5% of that.
5%
right?
Correct.
I say we put this on consent.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 8, consider property agreement for property located at approximately 100 East and Knoll Street.
So this is a proposal we have to purchase a piece of property we're going to use for future infrastructure development. We probably won't use the whole piece, but that was what the sale was, so we would buy the whole piece. We had it appraised. It's just a little bit shy of the 2 acres. Appraisal price is $240,000. The sellers are agreeable to that price, or they've actually agreed to the proposal we made as far as the sales contract. We just need your approval to sign the sales contract, get the title report moving, and pay for the property.
And it's being paid for?
There's two different accounts. One's impact fees and one's streets widening. They can both, they both have funding in them. They're both good sources to pay for it.
And impact fees are more restrictive, so that might be the better one to spend out of.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Whatever Mr. Norris tells me to do, that's what I'll do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's on OBC Road.
I was curious, just this is really more a question.
Or we'll do C Road.
This is more a question than anything. In our decision paper that was sent to us, how come the address wasn't put in here?
Did we just intentional.
It was intentional.
Correct.
Okay. I'm fine. It seems
me
like
too.
It's the appraised value, and
yep.
We need it.
Thank you.
Can that go on consent?
Sure.
Yes.
Then let's put it on consent.
Item number 9, consider an amendment to an agreement with Iron County related to the new correctional facility.
Okay, so long story short, last year we signed an agreement with the county to do, among other things, get water for the new jail. And that agreement went into some other things. They were going to borrow some gravel from us, and we worked out a trade in there. and they were going to connect to our sanitary sewer system. So we signed the agreement. We had some language in there about the sanitary sewer system. Then the fellows at the wastewater plant met with the fellows at the jail and the guys that are building the jail, and they got kicking around some different ideas. So the change in wording here is to cover two things. The first one is the grease trap. So that would be an underground grease trap, sand separator, so that no greasy stuff gets into the sewer line. And that would be one of the technologies. The other technology is a new thing that actually Pete was very positive about, Pete Suri. It's a combination of a screen system and a grinder system. So the effluent would first go through the screen out everything it could, then it would go through a grind. No, wait a minute, I got that backwards. So you go grinder first, and then you go screen second, and all that stuff gets put into a dumpster, and then you have a clean effluent stream going into our sewer lines.
Syringes, drug paraphernalia, bongs, that kind of stuff stays out of our sewer system.
Toothbrush
and goes
sharpened
the
into a point.
Shivs.
Clothing. Yeah. Whatever the inmates choose to stuff into the sewer system.
Yeah.
We catch it first, and it stays out of our sewer system. Mm-hmm. So this language is designed to cover that second technology. So that's the only amendment we have.
So the in-ground sand/oil and or grease interceptor is our old grease traps.
It's a grease trap, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other one is this combination screen grinder.
Bad.
Throw it in the dumpster.
Best available treatment technology.
Yep.
I think it's great. Okay. I think we should do it. In full agreement.
Consent? No. Yep.
Yeah, I think we can do it on consent, right? Yep, let's do it.
Item number 10, consider an ordinance regulating the placement of statues, monuments, and related items.
Okay. So last year we had a couple of requests. One didn't come to fruition. One's probably still in the works. I'm not sure on the status of it. But it brought up a conversation about how the city regulates when we put and where we put statues and monuments on our property. So a little bit of research, we found this, we found a similar ordinance for Ogden City. That's where most of this comes from. And then Randall and Kenny and I went through it and carved it up a little bit. We sent it to Mr. Phillips. He made some suggestions. We added some more, and that's the product you have before you. So basically it says that a couple things up front. One, when we agree to put these things on our property, it protects us on the free speech aspects. So there's some protection built in there for us on that. It makes a preference that these go on private property. It has a preference that private people do stuff on, not on city property, but on private property, and that private people maintain it. It leaves the decision open to the council as to whether or not we ultimately accept one to become something that's on our property and something that we maintain. So, for example, right now, we have the statues up and down Main Street. We have the statues over in Veterans Park. We pay about $4,000 a year to keep them looking nice. The new statue of Mr. Wood went on private property, and that'll be maintained by private folks in the future. So that won't be a public issue. That's one thing this does. It gets the council involved to approve just the broad idea of putting a monument on city property. Then it turns it over to the mayor and staff and whatever advisory committees you guys want to refer it to work out the details of, does it go on this square foot or that square foot, and work out the final details on the design, because as you know, those things, they are a little bit fluid. And then at the end of it, it has a section that deals with donations and people donating money or property or things to us. It has one portion I want to call your attention to that says, if you get your name on a building, you have to use your name, and you can't use symbols or brands or anything else. We've Cedar City in the past has gone opposite that. We have the Diamond Z Arena, and that's a brand on the side of that building. It's nice, and it represents the folks that gave us the money to build it. So please, if you want to change that, let me know. Other than that, I'll get out of the way.
Is that the only one that we've branded that you're aware of, the Diamond Z?
That's the only place I can think of that we've used something other than a name, and it's a symbol, a brand, something else. Yeah,
and it's quite fitting at an a rodeo arena.
The way they approached him for the
right.
It is a name too. I mean, the brand is
Zafiropoulos.
Yeah, it's the name. So.
But that would be grandfathered in.
That would be grandfathered forward, in. But if there were future applications at that facility, where somebody who was generous enough to give us a large sum of money wanted to use a brand to memorialize that and gain recognition from that, that's what I was trying to bring up.
Hmm. That's maybe something we want to leave a little fluid.
I think so, especially at that facility. I don't know that anyone else is going to want to put a brand, but it's kind of very fitting in a livestock facility to have a brand on it.
There are others, and it is enticing to businesses who may not want their names on buildings, but to give money. We built the restroom shower facility at Thunder Ridge Scout Camp because it carries Southwest Plumbing's name on it.
Well, the other thing that we exclude is the Rotary Club. They have the Rotary symbol, which is the gear, and we exclude the Lion Clubs, which would have their logo.
They do them on the pavilions, when they build.
Correct.
There's the Lions Pavilion. Main Street Park has their symbol on it.
I personally don't think we should limit logos and brands.
I think that should probably be something that we shouldn't say automatically happens, but it is assessed when the design comes to us, because you may want to have the Nike swoosh on the building if they give you $1 million, but you don't want to have call 1-800 such and such for what I mean.
Correct.
I mean, so I think we have to look at it as they come to us. I mean, I know there's some discussions been going on for some time about trying to get some funding for the Heritage Theater, so maybe it becomes something else, but it maybe is the Eccles Heritage Theater or something, but it still carries the name of the Heritage. I think those can be assessed when we sort of...
So is there a way just to put it in there that at the staff level, the donor may be recognized on the face of the facility, but no logos, trademarks, or other symbols can be used without council approval or something like that?
We'll change it for next.
The other thing I mentioned, and I think I brought it up before, is my only concern about monuments and historical markers and things of that nature is what criteria? I mean, we have so many people that said, well, my mother taught in the school district for 44 years and she gave her life to this thing. A lot of people.
So did everyone else she worked with, right?
I mean,
not to diminish what it is.
No, right. And so I'm not sure how we look at what that criteria is. And I do believe, and I've mentioned this to a couple of people already, that if we're going to do something to honor somebody that did some remarkable things for the community, like Gerald R. Sherrod or something, I do believe there should be a time period that passes before it is allowed, and I know other communities do it. I don't know if that's 3 years, I don't know if that's 5 years, because when somebody passes, the emotions are very high, and everybody says, oh, he or she was so wonderful. So you're prone to react to that.
Well, and sometimes things come out after they die too.
Yeah.
And
so, and I don't know what that time period is, but I do believe that if we're going to rename a boulevard or we're going to name a theater or something after someone, I think there has to be a time period that nothing can happen for X number of years. I don't know if it's 3 years, I don't know if it's 5 years, I don't know what it is, but I think we have to look at a time.
5 to 10.
Don't
10 years.
There needs to be a passion in the community down the road.
Yeah.
To warrant it in my mind.
Because
I agree.
Still being remembered. They're still talked about. Because the impact was so powerful that people still want to honor that individual for whatever reason.
Yes.
And then I don't know what criteria you put around that. I mean, so, what makes someone worthy of?
Yeah, what's built in there right now is very subjective to the elected officials as to whether or not we do it in the first place. I'm not sure how to phrase something that captures what you're trying to say. The subjectiveness built into this leaves you guys a broad range of...
I mentioned to Mr. McCune today that I just noticed just yesterday and the day before KSL had carried the story that Salt Lake City is entertaining an application for historical markers and monuments in Salt Lake City. And you can make application through February 20th for consideration. I don't know what the criteria is. I haven't gone on and looked at their website. But individuals can't do it. It has to be chambers or governments or somebody that has to make that quote-unquote application for consideration. So I was going to look at that. I just haven't done it yet.
That's a good point, because if it's just an individual and we start doing it, there's no limit to it. If you can get an organization to get behind you,
right,
then you probably have a group of people that are willing to put the passion behind it too.
Correct.
And so, you know, and that's...
And to either maintain it or raise the funds for it because you've got somebody there.
Correct.
An organization there. Yeah.
It's like the Rotary Veterans Park, right? I mean,
right.
Getting behind that and, you know...
So I think this is a great first step. I think we need to do a little work on it and some tweaking.
So we'll change the language about the brand's logos. We'll change the time period. Anything else that you would like to
I had
change?
A question, and this is going to maybe sound wrong. Mayor, please don't take this the wrong way. I just question where it says the final location and design is up to the mayor. I don't know that the design should be up to the mayor, whoever the mayor is.
Well, I certainly have an opinion.
Well, and that's fine. We all have opinions. But I think...
they're like armpits.
You know, a monument is going to be designed by an artist. We have to approve that or suggest changes, but I don't think we should be responsible to design monuments and statues and things of that nature.
I didn't read it that way. I read it that somebody's going to bring us a proposal, and the mayor and the people that are going to end up taking care of it get to approve those final things.
Maybe we can find a different word besides design.
Okay.
The final location and placement or I don't know.
Well, you probably want at least some ability to say no.
Mm-hmm.
You've probably seen some that have come in other cities that usually after it's put in, somebody realizes it looks like something else.
Well, there's so is it giving the mayor veto power?
There's an apartment complex.
He could say no. I mean, that's...
Well, type of material, there's all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And I think staff, Parks Department,
absolutely,
is going to have a lot to say about that.
Well, and I would hope that the Historic Preservation Commission could at least review some of these, too, because their very thing is historical markers and historical people. So I would like to have them at least... review or make recommendations.
They would bring recommendations.
Yeah, they would bring recommendations.
The mayor would review it, but
yep.
Whatever. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But it does allow mayor for you to designate somebody as well.
Yeah, so. And the mayor designee.
Yeah.
I designate me, is that what he says?
Mayor's
designee.
Because that's usually where I delegate things, Mr.
You designate me?
I designate you.
So is that something that can be done in a week, do you think? Or
yeah,
do we...
I'll make changes. I'll bring it back. If you guys don't like it, tell me again. And we'll try again.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 11, consider an ordinance establishing time of day watering restrictions.
Okay, this is another one that came up the end of last year, the request to review the city's time of day watering restrictions. So first of all, what these restrictions don't do is they do not impact people that use what we consider secondary non-potable water. It is aimed at residential use, not parks and schools and industry. It's residential use. The watering restriction currently says, sorry, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's the hours that you're allowed to not water during. You can water during the other hours, but not between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. It goes from April 1 to October 31st. Some of the information you received in your packets was a quick survey of some other cities and towns. And then Jonathan had some information, and then our new water superintendent had some more information, and that was all forwarded to you. The staff overwhelming recommendation would be to have it 8 a.m. to, what was yours, Jonathan, 8 to 6?
Or 8 to 7.
8 to 10?
Well, I
said 10 to 8. 10 to 8, I'm sorry.
10 to.
Which I think actually makes more sense. But
yeah, and I think temperature-wise, that makes sense. The problem is people with jobs that don't have water systems aren't going to be able to water, right?
The 10 to 8 one?
10 to 8, yeah, because
they can't water in the morning before they go.
They can't water before work, you know, unless they're waking up really early to water, sometimes while it's still dark, right? If they have to be to work by 8.
Or
6.
10 to 8, wait. So the
10 a.m. So yeah, if you can't water between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m.,
correct.
Right?
So how does somebody that work with the
so if you have a job,
well, couldn't they water when they get home?
No, not till 8 p.m.
Yeah, and so you'd have.
I like 9 to 7, and I'll tell you why. Because I think it is. I saw the temperature numbers, but 7 o'clock still gives you plenty of ample light in a 3-hour period to. You know, I'm just throwing that number out to get your watering done. Even seniors that are got hoses and sprinklers can do it in a 3-hour period most of the
time. Well, yeah, because I'm contrary, but no, most people shower in the morning between 6 and 7:30, and so if that's the water, I don't know if there's a water use graph that shows that the mornings are subject to more use. I don't know if that even takes a lot.
Yeah. So Matt did some work on the. It's kind of shows you how the tanks drop and then how they refill. And one of the things Matt brought up, and he can speak for himself, but it was interesting to me that a couple of years ago we had the voluntary water restrictions where the council said, okay, if you have an even house number, you get these 3 days to water. Right, if you have an odd house number, you get the other 3 days. Nobody waters on Sunday.
So between 7 a.m.
And that was the best results for our ability to recover the tanks.
Really?
Yeah.
Probably ought to make that mandatory.
That was better than the time of day restriction.
Interesting.
That every year.
Is that where we
live? Yeah, because I think the challenge, you know, most people with newer homes that have sprinkler systems, they're automated anyway, right? But we want people who don't have those to water while it's light and while they can look for overspray, things like that. I mean, I think maybe less than half of my street has automated sprinklers, you know, and the rest do it manually. And that is, I mean, while it's still light is when you can check for overspray. So you're not watering the sidewalk, you're not watering the driveway. And so I would worry about pushing it too late into the night. Yeah. So, I'm just thinking out loud, but how many people would even be impacted by this anyway, right? I mean, maybe I would guess less than 20% of our city waters manually without an automated system, and so.
But it's funny, this is one of the things I get contacted on every single year.
Oh, yeah.
Phone calls on it.
The water restrictions.
So is there a corresponding time on those graphs? Is it 7? Is that 7 a.m.? Because if it goes clear to 30, there's not many hours in the day.
That's I think midnight falling down, and then right there is about 8 o'clock.
In the morning?
8 a.m., and then the tank levels off between 8 and 9, and that's when we start gaining. It's from 9 a.m.
Okay.
To so about 1700 or 7 p.m. There's a little usage, and then right there is where you get your 18. This is on, I don't know what day that is, but usually on a Sunday it's not bad. But our biggest watering days are Wednesday, or Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Thursday night, Friday morning. Mm. So that's probably this day.
So the tank is fully recovered by 10-ish? Is that what you're saying, the top of the?
No, right here, this is 7, 8 p.m.
Okay.
So this goes from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m.
So we draw it out in the morning, and then it takes all day to fill back up.
Yep, so right here is from 9 a.m. to about 8 p.m. That's how long, and then we try to keep it, you know, see the usage to roll across.
Right.
Try to keep it going, supplying demand.
So it takes at least
9 hours or whatever, yeah.
9, 10, 12 hours to fill back up.
9 to 8, mm-hmm. 11 hours to fill our tanks.
But that's, it's filling, but is the, are we filling it constant 24 hours a day?
Yes. So that usage during the summer, July, so we, that's pumping 5,300 gallons a minute, plus what's the...
I mean, that's, yeah, that's all overnight timers, right? And so, and that's where I'm, I mean, if we're running it all the time anyway, I'm just not sure. I mean, yeah, there's some reduced evaporation, but...
The idea of going later, though, is because, you know, people say we'll end it at 6, but the temperature is still really hot between 6 and 8, and so you do get, it can be, but to you're saying, then that doesn't leave the people that water...
Right, and the ones that are manually spraying, it's not like a fine mist sprayer either, which is the highest waste, right? It's those are sprinklers that are the fine mist that are having a lot of, you know, wind carriage and evaporation. It's the bigger droplets, you don't really lose that much even when it's hotter. So
the people who water 7 days a week, 20 minutes a station, 13 stations.
And that's the big thing. If people are watering a whole lot, just bill the hell out of them, right? I mean, that's,
they do, trust me.
I know. And
they get the bill.
You know, people get their half acre foot for their house traditionally, and that's, you know, that's 20,000 gallons a month.
But if we don't do something, it looks like we're not even attempting to try and conserve water and to be water conscious. So we have to have something in place.
Right. No, and I think, I mean, I would be inclined to, if we wanted to extend the period, you know, maybe I realize temperature-wise it makes sense to shift the window later in the day, but, you know, if we want to have a certain block of time, let's leave it at 6 and put the restriction closer to 6 or 7 a.m. You know, most folks that are that have the automated timers, it's, what, between midnight and 6 usually?
No water. They're really... No water usage between 6 and 7 anyway. And 7, yeah. Do that, and then 8, it just does that. So I would recommend keeping it 8 to 6 for let those tanks. I know people.
What about the idea of every the even and odd sites to the streets?
Between 8 and 6?
Well, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I don't know. I'm just wondering, because that came up in two different discussions, both with Kent and part of you said that was the most useful.
I read, yeah. In 2022, we did that, because I think we had a well down or it got hot.
Right.
So we did that, and it helped out a lot.
I think one problem is a lot of the programmers, the automatic ones, are not on an odd-even day. They're on a
every third day. Yeah.
And so you hit the 31st and the 1st, you have two odd days together. And
yeah, it depends on which one you're at.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't do odd and evens. What we did
days
is
of the
we
week.
Said if you had an even house number, you got Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Perfect.
If you had an odd house number, you got Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, mm-hmm. and everybody lay off on Sunday. Mm-hmm.
If your lawn can't make it a couple days, you're watering way too early in the season anyway.
Just keep in mind also when we were on that odd even day, it was still 8 to 6 during the days.
Right.
So I'm not saying necessarily, I think you'd have both restrictions.
So we don't really know a true odd even without the other part of the restriction,
I see.
What that would do to our tanks.
I see.
Jonathan, do you have the one from the one I sent you in the email? That was 21. This, I don't know, I got some here. July, August, and June, and they all, well, let me pull it up. So, yeah, there you go right there. So that's the month of July this year.
So tell us what that says.
So that's just our tank level. So it goes 20 feet down to 11 feet, back up to 18 down here, back all the way up.
So on July 10th, it never even got back, or the 12th.
So yeah, right. And I looked up. July 13th was the hottest day of the year, 103 degrees. Mm. So that was this right here. So that was so much water, and we never recovered to catch back up.
Right.
To there. And maybe we got a little rain, or somebody realized they got a water bill. That was a lot.
That was the big jog. Turn it off.
Yeah, see, you can see where it went from over 25 feet down to 11, 12 feet right there, so they used a lot of water.
Yeah, on July 20th, 21st.
Critical.
A lot of water.
Mm-hmm. And that, every
well,
tank.
Well, it's unsustainable.
So every tank doesn't look like that big a drop, but they all take that 9 hours, mm-hmm. 11
Do you
hours
think we need to go through the end of October? Because one of the suggestions was maybe not as long.
Yes, because well, this year we went, October was still 75 degrees, and we still hadn't every well running in October. When I was up there hunting on the mountain, I was in a T-shirt.
Okay.
Yeah.
And once the snowstorm hit just before the deer hunt, then everybody shut down, and that's when we shut all our wells down.
Right.
End of October.
And then it got warm again.
Yeah.
Until January the 5th.
Until yesterday.
And I still have green spots, and I haven't watered since September.
So your recommendation is leave it 8 to 6.
Correct.
And do you think we ought to do the odd-even situation?
I would maybe see how the summer starts, June-ish, how many wells we're running. If we lose a well, we're going to be going to something.
Oh, I know. But even if we didn't, I mean, especially that's something we could decide.
Year that we've had.
Pardon?
The kind of winter we've had,
We probably should almost determine that already now.
Well, that's kind of
I mean, we could have a good spring.
The challenge is the summer. Yeah, the winter doesn't really isn't a good forecaster.
But I guess that's something we could make a change on and notify the public if we needed to do that.
What's the enforcement of our? How do we currently enforce, and what is the plan?
They get a little written notification put on their doorknob or in their.
Who does it? Just as they're going
just
around.
Just as we're driving around doing our daily stuff.
They waterboard them.
Or sometimes people call.
We get the complaints we got to look at, but mostly just us driving around. We'll see a water go. Throw a notice on the door.
Yeah.
So there's an enforcement mechanism built into the ordinance.
Okay.
If you look in paragraph 4, it talks about first offense, second offense, third offense. It's designed to say first offense, the water guys tell them, hey,
a warning, little horn slip.
Here's a reminder. Here's our
ordinance time.
Yeah. The second offense is a
$25.
And then the third offense is $100.
Turn off is $25 to turn it back on, and the third one's a turn off at the $100.
What about toilet paper in their house, just to show them, hey, we're counting,
That stuff's expensive.
We're calling you out, I know. Or at least a paintball gun.
Okay,
so what we're hearing is from the people that have to enforce this is that they're suggesting we leave it the same.
Let's leave it the same, and then I think we should start. I don't know. I'm for the odd even days.
Well, already. That's another thing, too, that's interesting about the hours. If we push it past 6, they're not working anyway, so there's no enforcement between 6 and 8 p.m. because they're not out.
I think if you push it 8, we're off at 5.
They're not working. There's no enforcement past 6 o'clock anyways.
We got more worry about a leak than a sprinkler system at that time.
I mean, so I don't like having things.
So, Mr. Pittman, do you have a directive on then what you need to do?
Well, if you guys want to leave it alone, we'll just take it off the agenda.
Yeah, I think that's what we're going to do, evidently.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd just like to add
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I agree with you, but I think we keep an eye on that, we do it immediately if that happens to happen.
Bring back up
later.
Mayor, I would move that we close this work meeting and move into our closed session.
Second.
I have a motion and second. All in lips.
You got to do a roll
call. Starting with Mr. Phillips.
Aye.
Aye.